Welcome to the Daily Flow. Please welcome your host, John Coleman.
The question I want to deal with today, isn't Kanban just about outputs? Isn't Kanban missing a trick with value and organizational capability? First of all, I want to give you a little bit of context because there's a wonderful framework called evidence-based management from scrum.org, and it has two aspects. The first aspect I won't go into so much today, which is about goals or your direction of travel. You can have a strategic goal, intermediate goal, a tactical goal, and they're all good things. But what I want to zone in on today would be the four key value areas of evidence-based management. Two of those key value areas are about organizational capability, and two of them are about what value you're delivering to the market. In terms of organizational capability, what a lot of people focus on is time to market, speed. How often am I getting this product out to the market? Then you've got ability to innovate, which I prefer to label inability to innovate. What's slowing us down from delivering? Do we have some dysfunction in the way we're operating? For example, if we were managing a queue of people at a border with Ukraine and there was some dysfunction in terms of the way the queue has been managed, that might be something that's slowing us down. In terms of value, evidence-based management looks at two other key value areas. One of them is called current value, which is metaphorically the equivalent of milking the cow we already have. Then there's unrealized value, which is really potential value, trying to reap rewards from unmet customer needs, previously unmet customer needs, and now we're trying to reap those rewards and make those available to customers and hopefully expand our market share and so on. So when you look at these four key value areas, current value, as in how well we're serving the current customers, if you like. Unrealized value, the potential value that maybe we haven't reaped yet. Maybe that could be coming from new customers, not even our existing customers, but it could also be unmet needs of our existing customers. Time to market and ability to innovate. So now let's look at Kanban in the context of those four key value areas. And let's see, how is Kanban doing? And what things could you do to your Kanban that might cause harm actually to your ability to deliver value. So Kanban is a strategy to optimize the flow of value through a visual pull-based system. And value in Kanban can mean customer value, end user value, could be some kind of market value, organizational value, maybe we're cutting costs or protect the reputation of our organization, something like that. Could be sustainable value, like maybe you want to reduce plastic or we want to reduce carbon, or it could be about reducing risk. Maybe there's a lot of risk in what we've already delivered to customers, and maybe we need to do something a bit better. John Seddon talks about failure demand, which is failure to do something right for the customer. I think we need to be careful about driving things to deadlines and then basically messing up the customer experience. It's something we really need to be watching out for. So that's interesting, right? Kanban, if it's really about delivering value, then you could have an input queue, I guess. And some people would have a backlog, and that backlog in Kanban doesn't have to be ordered, by the way. A lot of people think the backlog has to be ordered. It actually doesn't. So you might select something from some input queue or options queue or whatever, and you bring those items in. You could have all sorts of ways of prioritizing that value. You might come up with some formulas. I find they're always wrong anyway, but you might use some kind of formula. You might rely on the highest paid person's opinion in the room, which is supposed to be not a very good one. You could be using evidence based on what experiments have you already run. Do we already have some data that we should deliver these things? You could use cost of delay. The jury's a bit out about whether you should use that or not. I personally find it useful. You can use all sorts of techniques you want to prioritize something, but in Kanban, once you start something, you should just finish it. And a classic error that a lot of practitioners make is they start something. And so let's say my boss asked me to do something 3 weeks ago that says is urgent. And then I get asked today to do something else that's the new shiny ball, the new urgent thing. And maybe the person's forgotten about the item that was urgent 3 weeks ago. that item that was urgent from 3 weeks ago is now rotting on my Kanban board unless I'm a good practitioner and I say, hey, on a second, let me just finish that one and then we'll do this one. I'm not saying you shouldn't leapfrog items, but there's a price that we pay when we allow items to get older in our system after we started them. Eventually, they will have bad cycle times. And if you leave enough of those cycle times, how long things take, if we leave enough of that to go badly on you, then what could happen is your throughput will eventually go down. And when your throughput goes down, it's already almost too late. It's a long recovery. And the recovery is to reduce, to focus what you're working on and to finish items. So a lot of people are wondering, Kanban's really about finishing stuff. And that's true to an extent. Kanban guide does support discovery and research. So it's completely okay to have some of your items actually running experiments. Some people are just in delivery land. God love them. They're in feature factories and they're delivering stuff. And that's their world. And that's fine. It's not a very nice world to be in because you don't know whether you're making a difference, whether you've made a difference to what's going on. And the classic mistake is that people prioritize work that's already started. And so they're just messing around. And what they don't realize is that the shape of their cycle times, if you imagine cycle times as shape, some things take this length of time, some take that length of time. There's more frequency on one, there's less frequency on another. It starts getting wider and wider. You start to see longer and longer cycle times. And this can be quite problematic. So if you really focus on finishing what you started, and if you use a policy, like, for example, that focuses maybe on aged items and blocked items and items that maybe we've forgotten about. By keeping on top of that, that actually helps you to limit work in progress through the back door, because you mightn't even notice if you do have work in progress limits, you mightn't even notice them because you're actually naturally going under them because you're focusing on finishing work. But there's a bit of a dance. You're not just trying to finish work. You're also trying to make sure there's nothing artificially aging or relatively aging compared to something else. Or you're making sure that something's blocked, is getting unblocked as quickly as possible. But you also need to make sure that the system isn't starving. So it's like a bit of a dance of these three kind of compromises, a trade-off, if you like. I'm oversimplifying now. But that's the dance that you have to do to try and deliver items. And the dance becomes a little bit chaotic, almost like an Irish Ceilidh, but when you've got more items in the system than people doing the work, because it means there's always something that you've started that you're not working on, which means things are aging, which means cycle times take longer, which means eventually your throughput goes down. So the sweet spot in my experience is actually less than the number of people on the team, but context is king and all that. It just depends on what you're doing, and there might be some special circumstances in your situation. So the Kanban view of the world is we try to deliver things as quickly as possible so you can get feedback sooner, so you can find out if you've got outcomes, if they're positive outcomes or if they're negative outcomes. Have you got outcomes? Has it actually made a difference? And that really is where Kanban helps you to deliver current value. And it also helps you with your time to market, because if you're implementing those practices of defining your workflow, here's your work, this is how the work goes through the system, this is how we control work in progress, this is how we decide what work goes into the system, this is how we decide on a daily basis which item we're going to focus on today. If we have a service level expectation saying maybe, for example, 85% of the time items finish in 15 days or less, and we have a policy almost in terms of how long things should take, if we're really disciplined with our Kanban will improve your current value, and it'll also improve your time to market. But I want to go back to evidence-based management, because there's two other key value areas, and a lot of people think that maybe Kanban isn't so good at dealing with those two key value areas, one of them being ability to innovate and the other one being unrealized value. And I just want to address that. I want to go back to that example. Imagine you're in a queue, you're a refugee in a queue, and you're waiting to cross the border into some country bordering with Ukraine, and you're trying to get through. And some genius has decided that there's going to be different priority queues, okay? Because there might be very good reasons for that, but they don't realize what they've done actually to the queue. Believe it or not, it's usually better for the common good for everyone to go through the same queue and for all people who are servicing that queue to be working together on that queue. And so when people come through, it might look like a very long queue, but if the team is so focused and they're getting it through people more quickly, processing the paper more quickly, and processing whatever donations they're giving them more quickly, it leads to a more fluid situation. Now, it depends on the workflow as well, of course. I'm not on the ground. I don't know what's going on. But generally speaking, just speaking purely theoretically, what can happen is if you start having preferential queues for going across the border, while some people are getting across the border more quickly, what happens overall is the cycle times for everyone gets longer and more unpredictable, actually. And so it means that when new people join that queue, it takes even longer and less predictable in terms of, and then cheating starts happening and people start jumping queues. And in Kanban, when you've got work in progress and you've got people, you've got priorities changing in terms of what's going on, that makes the flow even worse. I'm not a big fan of classes of service in Kanban, and some people think it's a good idea because it leads to preferential treatment for certain types of work. In this case, I'm talking about people in a queue. That might be a good thing or a bad thing. I don't have enough context, so who am I to say? But speaking purely theoretically, it can cause problems if you have, say, this is the emergency queue and this is the standard queue, and these people have to be across by that particular day because their passports are running out of date. There might be very good reasons why that's actually a good idea, that particularly if they're paperwork is running out of date, that might be something you need to do. You just need to be aware the trade-off is that people will take longer to process across the border, and people's lives are in danger, and people join the queue, and the queue won't be safe forever. So it's generally better to have everyone going through the same queue. The one class of service that I actually do like, though, is intangible. And not everybody agrees with me on this. This is just my personal opinion. So intangible is about, it could be a couple of things. It could be maybe there's some long-term work that needs to be done at some point, but it could also be some improvement to the system. So if, for example, we understand that the queuing system for people going across the border is badly organized, the fences are, the ropes aren't working properly, or they're not correctly protected, or discipline isn't being preserved in the queue, or whatever it is. These are things that affect our ability to innovate, in a sense, and that it's making it difficult for us to actually to do more work because the system needs to be improved. And intangible work can really help you to basically improve the system. And so sometimes it's a good idea to have some work in the system that's for improving the system, for the common good, if you like, to make the system better. In a sense, what you could do with Kanban, it helps with your current value, helps with your time to market. You try to finish work once it started. You can even get it to help you with your ability to innovate. You could do all sorts of improvement work, basically. Long-term work that would help the system for everybody. And then in terms of unrealized value, I think that's fairly easy to sort out with Kanban as well, because really unrealized value is about trying to discover what's the next product, what's the unmet need that we're not serving. And a lot of the time you need to run lots of experiments to figure that out. If you over-index on it, you're experimenting forever and your current customers aren't happy. You could over-index or under-index in all of these four key value areas in evidence-based management. But if you have some kind of balance in your portfolio, in terms of the work, and you also do some experiments in terms of, maybe for that queue, for example, you do some experiment in terms of some new design that might have better flow. Maybe if you get over the border, but then there's another problem. Maybe the workflow needs to be extended to what happens once people cross the border. How are they handled? Where do they get their food? How do they rest? How do they get served in buses? Things like that. Maybe we can extend the workflow, things that we can improve for that. We can do experiments on that as well in terms of how we can make that better. So it's a bit of a stretch using the example at the border, but I'm hoping it kind of rings some bells with people. So for me, Kanban isn't about outputs. It does help you to, it's a strategy to help you to optimize the flow of value. It does that really well. I've seen it time and time again. Not only does it deliver more value, people have more time to think, and hopefully they produce better quality, which might also improve ability to innovate, or what I call inability to innovate, because we're doing better quality. Maybe we're not getting less noise coming back into the system about things we didn't do right the first time. As a wise man said to me years ago, take the time it takes so it takes less time. So that's my little nugget for you today on Kanban and outputs. If you've got any burning topic that's been bugging you that you'd like me to address, just feed a question through whichever channel you're watching, and I'll be happy to bring that up in a future episode. Thank you so much. Have a good day.